are back. Thank you for tuning in tonight. We are back here. This is In the Blue Seats Weekly. It's a whole new idea, whole new show, whole totally different fun stuff, fun times. Joining you once again, you heard my voice yesterday. It's Sean. Gary's going to be joining us in a few minutes. This is going to be an excellent show. We do have a good hour and a half worth of New York Rangers content to talk about, but we do also have the phone lines open. You guys, we are eager to hear your voice. We want to hear your voice. Please call us in at 657-383-1130. We'll be happy to take your call. We'll be happy to talk to you about the New York Rangers. We'll be happy to talk to you about whatever you want to complain about. If you want to complain about how, you know, the Rangers haven't played good recently, sure, we can talk about that. If you want to talk about why Derek Stepan is your favorite bald eagle on the New York Rangers, be my guest. Nick's not going to be joining the show today because he's a little under the weather. So this is a show where we can profess our love about Derek Stepan and not get thrown at under the bus or guilt tripped about why we like him. Once again, this is Sean. A lot of stuff going on in Rangerstown. We want to talk to you guys about all this stuff. Lot to go into. So really, as you know, InTheBlueSeats.com relaunched as of Sunday. After the Ottawa Senators game, we brought you a post game where we focus on some things. We're going to give you a lot of content skating around the New York Rangers and other things and other aspects of the Ranger team, organizational news, team news, pre and post games. We'll have the post game shows like we had last night with myself and Gary. So a lot of stuff going on there, but we need your help. If you guys are interested in writing, you want to get your voice out there, you have a lot of opinions that you want to share. Specifically, if you know a lot about the Wolfpack, the Hartford Wolfpack, to be exact, we could use your help. We need somebody who's a seasoned Wolfpack fan that wants to share the notes about the team. Who looks good? Who could possibly get a call-up? I know Bunieves got a lot of call-ups. One call-up so far, not a lot, really not a lot. But is he worth the really calling up over Marakovic or some of the other players on the Wolfpack? We want to know if you guys are interested in writing about the Wolfpack. Please send us an email at intheblueseats@gmail.com. Send along a writing sample as well. Obviously, we will take more New York Rangers writers because there's a plethora of people that probably want to type behind their keyboards about how they hate a certain player, and it's a great idea for us to allow you to do that right here on InTheBlueSeats.com. But as long as you're rational, as long as you make sense, we will make sure you're doing the right thing. Now, also with that, here's what we'll be doing going forward. A lot of the stuff we'll be doing is going to be very basic, very opinionated. We all three of us, myself, Gary, and Nick, have our own opinions. Obviously, you on Twitter have your own opinions as well. We want to hear them. You can always tweet us at In the Blue Seats. We'll go in a lively debate with you. We'd have a good conversation last night after we posted the post game. You know, going back and forth on the different ideas. We'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later in the show. But let's go on to last night's game. Really, what happened here was the Rangers started out pretty slow. Obviously, if you didn't catch the 33-minute postgame that we had last night, we're going to give you the SparkNote version of it now. But we do have it available for you up on iTunes. You just search In the Blue Seats, Stitcher Radio for anyone who doesn't have an iPad, iPhone, iOS, i-something device. So if you have an Android or you rather listen to your podcast on Stitcher, we're available on In the Blue Seats as well. Or we do have a Stitcher player nicely set up on InTheBlueSeats.com that you can listen to our pretty voices no matter what. But, you know, coming back to it, thinking about what happened, you know, listening in and playing around and following the game as much as we did, I took a night to digest it. I dreamt about the game a little bit, you know, thought about, you know, certain aspects of the game. And one thing that really did stick out to me is Brady Shea is an excellent defender. I know that I didn't say it yesterday. I do apologize for not saying yesterday. It's really rude of me, but Brady Shea is an excellent defender. I do love Brady Shea. I feel he is probably one of the better defenders that we have besides Ryan McDonagh. I think he ranks number two in my mind. But if you really think about it and you really look at what's going on with the Rangers, there's only two defensemen in my mind that stick out. It's Shea and McDonagh. Girardi is what Girardi is going to be for the rest of his career. I think if he minimizes his minutes, if they play him to their advantage, he will be fine. He's been playing fine. Marc Staal is never going to be the same player that he was pre-concussion, pre-eye injury, pre-Eric, his brother. Staal's their brothers, hashtag. Don't forget to use that. You couldn't use it yesterday because Jordan was out. Probably will be out for Saturday's game against, once again, Carolina. But the Rangers have a defensive problem. Could probably nip it in the bud if they put in Adam Clendenning. It's a short-term solution. Definitely not something that I would want to see for a long time. But really, the person, the odd man out in this whole situation right now to me is Kevin Klein. Kevin Klein has been having probably one of his worst professional hockey seasons ever, more than certainly under the hot spotlight of the New York crowd. So this year, Kevin Klein has been put under the microscope, magnified. He's like that little ant, somebody's under the microscope with a magnifying glass trying to burn his face right off like you do with ants. I don't know. Someone has to do that. But he's been put under the microscope pretty hard. We've been watching him digress big time. He's not the same player that he used to be. Last year, I want to say since his injury, he's been slowing down a little bit, but that's just me. Now, what the Rangers really, really need to do is focus on possibly benching Klein. Now, you know, looking around Twitter, a lot of NYR Twitter faithful, the Twitter blue shirts, whatever you want to call yourselves, the Twitter knights of the Rangers universe, captain of commander of Rangers Town, whatever. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of things that they're talking about. So a lot of people, you know, are probably pointing out that Kevin Klein is injured. He did miss the beginning and the start of the season with back spasms. Is he playing through some back problems? Obviously, as we know, Pavel Buchnevich has been missing some time as well as he gained some strength in his lower back so he can be a stronger hockey player, more used to the United States way of doing things. So Pavel Buchnevich, we miss you. We hope you're doing better. But looking at Klein, there's something definitely wrong with him. Maybe it is his back. Maybe it's something else. I really don't know. I'm not playing doctor here. If there's any doctors who are New York Ranger fans that want to, you know, check out and see what's going on, you can call us in once again, 657-383-1130. That's Sean right now just waiting for Gary to jump on so we can really start this ball and get it going. But you see here with the New York Rangers, there's a lot to be happening here. You know, looking at the team, the first period and a half, they look flat. They look uninterested in the game. Victor Stahlberg, obviously the two quick goals really, really devastated the Rangers in a way where, you know, you thought this game was going to be one of those long, boring trap games after Carolina scored two goals. Oh, here we go. Game's over. Traps happening. Really nothing for the Rangers to do but just to dump and chase and then watch it go back to their own end or have an elongated zone time in their own end where they couldn't get it out, like we've seen sometimes through this current season. Now, the Rangers are going to be doing what they do best when they play a team that isn't really focused on understanding how they play, which is not really going to happen that often. The Rangers here are going to be getting tougher opponents. They're going to be getting around to playing the same teams over again. I mean, obviously we got Carolina again for the third time this Saturday. And then we got the Islanders on Tuesday for the second time, which they're going through their own problems. Really, I'm not worried about the Islanders, but it could be one of those weird games. We always play the Islanders weird. So to me, something interesting could happen with that game if we don't, you know, focus on our game plan and play to our strengths. But the one thing, going back to last night's Carolina game, they did a really good job of adjusting on the fly. As you saw near to the end of the second period and overall the third period, the Rangers adjusted their style to really capitalize on some chances and take over the game. Mentioning someone taking over the game is Rick Nash. Rick Nash did wonderful. I'm very happy with the way Rick Nash played. This is something that Ranger fans who don't understand what we're getting with Rick Nash, obviously we're not getting the selfish player that we once did, like we got in Columbus. But we are seeing shades of that this year when we need Rick Nash to carry a game, we get Rick Nash to carry a game. And that's a beautiful thing. I love it when Rick Nash takes over. You know, I mean, you look at the Rangers and you look at their current problems right now. You have some injuries going on with Mika Zibanejad at for another 7 to 8 weeks, depending on how quickly he heals. I'm not expecting everyone to be like Ryan Callahan, who, oops, by the way, is injured again. Go figure for Tampa. The Tampa's in a load of hurt of their own problems. I mean, it's tough. Former Ranger and now as alternate captain of the Tampa Bay Lightning, since that is his increased role that he got, Brian Boyle mentioned that he would love to play against them right now. By the way, they're playing. They lost 5-1, I believe, yesterday against Columbus, who Columbus is surprisingly very dangerous, as you saw in the 4-2 victory over the Rangers 2 weeks ago. The Rangers, if they get pulled off their game, and what I mean by that, if they get pulled off to the sideboards, if they get pulled off into a trap-type game after, you know, a team scores one, a team scores two against them, it's lights out. The Rangers don't know how to adjust. I will say a positive thing about last night is we did see some adjustment happening. I was very happy with it. I was very excited to see the Rangers play to their strengths and try to fight for what they wanted to do. This was a big team win. This was a big adversity win, but it was nothing bigger for one day and one day only to get the respect from none other from you, Ranger faithful, from none other than Rick Nash. Rick Nash doesn't have a Twitter. He doesn't have social media. He hears, though. He sees the things. You know, reporters come up to him during, you know, pregame, postgame scrums. They want to talk to him about it. They want to ask him questions. Oh, what do you think about people saying that you can't finish in the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. There's stuff like that that happens all the time with Rick Nash. There's stuff like that that happens all the time with professional players. Dan Girardi went through that last year. You can remember when Dan Girardi really was sick and tired of the fans and wouldn't give them a time of day. Somebody that was a backbone to the Rangers outside of the organization and outside of, you know, the bubble that is Madison Square Garden playing for the Rangers with that jersey on. He was a great off-ice leader. He took a little beating last year, and he let it get to him. This year, you're seeing Girardi come back into his old ways, because I feel not a lot of people are, you know, pushing on Girardi. There's still some people that still are. Obviously, that's going to happen. People are disappointed with the way that his career turned out, but you have some port of blame that you can blame certain people for having that happen. With Rick Nash, he tries his best to do what he can night in and night out. He tries his best to be the best overall player that he can be. He tries the best he can do. He is a three-zone player no matter what. We've seen that. We know that he is a three-zone player. He's become a three-zone player since becoming a New York Ranger. And that's something that, you know, a lot of people didn't realize with him. Gary mentioned it last night. He watches him in all three zones. Gary mentioned that he likes what he sees in all three zones. I like what I see from him in all three zones. This wasn't him in Columbus, because he needed to be that guy. If you want to compare Columbus Rick Nash, you could look no other than Marian Gabrick, former Ranger, now Los Angeles King, who's still, I think, recovering from injury. I don't know his deal, but whatever. He's doing the best he can right now to rejuvenate his career. He did win a Stanley Cup against the Rangers as a Los Angeles King. Ooh, sick burn hurts, right? But anyway, who cares? You can compare him to Marian Gabrick before he came over to the Rangers. He would take shifts off. He would, if games weren't going his way, Rick Nash would be selfish, take the game off, wouldn't really put the effort in. The Rangers, a different culture. He came in under the Tortorella regime. He got traded during the offseason, brought in under the Tortorella regime. And, you know, the main reason, and yeah, thanks, Nick, for that, not saying to me that his center isn't playing too well. Who hits his center right now? Kevin Hayes? Because right now he's playing with Kevin Hayes, and Kevin Hayes is playing exceptional. Anywho, we're looking at Rick Nash. He brings it over. He gets that Tortorella reprimanding. You know, he gets that Tortorella knowledge. Also, what helps him is that Mike Babcock, now coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, but coach of Team Canada, wanted him to be more defensive-minded. So he went to Elaine Vigneault, whispered in his ear, put him on the PK. What did he do? Elaine Vigneault listened to him because, you know, the Olympics were coming up, and he wanted to see how he would play on the penalty kill. He teamed him up with Derek Stepan, who, you know, Nick's messaging me, Stepan sucks, blah, 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 whatever the case may be. Putting those two together on the penalty kill was excellent. Both are defensive-minded, and especially Rick Nash. Rick Nash has become more defensive-minded than ever, and you see him playing in all three zones like never before. It's a beautiful thing. I like watching Rick Nash. I like watching Rick Nash play not only in the offensive end, I also like Rick Nash playing in our end and also in the neutral zone. He's a three-zone player, something that anyone who watched him in Columbus could not say he was. Now, you also look at it, too. A couple of the years that Rick Nash was upsetting the fans, so to speak, where he wasn't putting up 40 goals or, you know, doing anything crazy, he was injured. You know, the second year, the first full year really under Vigneault, he got the concussion. During the lockout shortened year, he got a concussion. So those two concussions in a calendar year, obviously the severity of those concussions really slowed his pace and slowed the way and slowed the energy of how his game is. Then he had the full season where he was the cup year where he scored 40. And then last year, he was injured again. Year before that, he was injured again. So you also have to look at it this way. You know, obviously with Nash being out for the six games in the lockout shortened year, he did score 26. Thank you, Nick. I really like you between the glass today. It's just amazing to me, and it's amazing to a lot of people where – you look at what Rick Nash does. I mean, obviously, you look at him, what he had to do in Carolina. In Carolina, he had to score. He had to put the puck in the net. He had to do everything he could to put that team on his back and win for the team because, really, there wasn't anyone else helping him to score. So his defensive side of the game struggled. You look at it when he came over to New York. There's some struggle where they needed someone to score because Gabrick and him didn't really work out, but he was really the one forcing the puck, scoring a lot. Then Gabrick got traded for, our Lord and Savior, Derek Jesus Christ Brassard, who, you know, then got traded for Mika Zibanejad, DJ Zib, if you want to call him that. But the fact is, the Rangers became better with Rick Nash. Because he's actually doing well in the postseason. It's weird. Everyone hated on Rick Nash for him not being a postseason performer. Look at how he's going right now in the postseason. You know, he carried the team, even though he scored 2 in 5 games. He really carried the team, and he did all he could to help the team win against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was just too good last year, and he really did everything he could to put the team on his back in games like when he did in certain games with Tampa Bay in that Eastern Conference final the year prior to that. He did everything he could. He was good in his end. He was good in the neutral zone, and he helped. You know, granted, you would like to see him put some pucks in the net, but he helped generate the offense so pucks could go into the net. It may have not been from him, but he did what he could to help generate players. He fed off, you know, Brassard. He fed off Zuccarello. He fed off anyone that he could help out. Oh, wait, not Zuccarello. He was injured there in these 15 playoff run, excuse me. But he did whatever he could to make his teammates better so that chances would still happen, and chances would still happen from his teammates. So that brings me back full circle as I went on my soapbox a little bit about Rick Nash to last night. Rick Nash was downright dirty. He was downright the best I've seen Rick Nash in a long time. I love this Rick Nash. Now, do I expect to see this Rick Nash night in and night out? No. But he is still dominant when he's not producing and he's not scoring those highlight reel goals. And he did state that it helped going off, you know, using Justin Falk's stick as a launching pad for that puck. Because I don't know if you noticed, but Falk's stick was on an edge. So he could just really slide that off of there and raise the puck a little bit higher to really go bar down off the crossbar and down straight. So everything going the Rangers' way last night was really just a lot of adversity, the team not giving up. And I appreciate the team not giving up because if the team game up, the whole conversation about this game last night on the post game and really after digesting and looking at this game now would have been much worse. Would have been much, much worse. But, you know, Rangers won, turn the page, they wash their hands of that game, they go out and have a good morning skate because they didn't practice today, and, you know, They do all whatever they can to make sure that this doesn't happen consistently. Well, this time last year was when the Rangers started to regress a little bit. We saw them regress down, and they became a 500 team at best. That's also because last year, really, they didn't have any offenses. Their scoring stopped, and their defense was just atrocious. McDonough had a very, very un-McDonough-like season. It was a very off year. It, you know, was weird to see Ryan McDonough not 100%, not into his game at all last year. He's obviously come back around this year, and he has been a much solid defender, a much more responsible defender. A lot of people put the blame on his defensive partner, the fact that Alain Vigneault wouldn't push him away from his defensive partner. Sure, we can blame that. That's the easy way out. I just didn't like his game at all last year. This year, he came back in and he really did whatever he could to, you know, make sure it didn't happen again. I love it. I love what I see from him. I love what I see from Brady Shea. I love what I see in certain aspects. I love what I see from Nick Holden. I mean, 3 goals, 10 points from him already so far through 24 games. Than anyone really thinking that he would be on the defensive end, where really no one really saw this coming. Did you really think that, you know, Nick Holden would already have 10 points, especially 3 goals already this part in the season? I didn't. I mean, he's come up in times where we really needed to get back into games, and he's played sound defensively. He's one of those players that if you don't hear Sam and Joe or, you know, whoever's calling the Ranger game on MSG or even on NBC, if you don't really hear Doc and Eddie and Pierre talk about him, that means he's having one of those games that he's doing a really good job. He's doing a really good job in his end. He's being responsible. Now, sure, you can blame him for the incorrect way he blocked the shot, leading it back into the slot for the first Victor Stahlberg goal. I agree with you 100%. We 100% should. But really, what else did he do besides that? I mean, you're looking at somebody who, obviously, if he was on any other team, I don't think he would be cracking a roster spot. But with the way the Rangers are and how thin they are defensively, it's honestly surprising that he's getting the chances that he is. But really, who else are you going to put in? Adam Clendenning is, according to AV, is not needed, but he really is. And I don't think you take out Nick Holden just because you want to put Adam Clendenning in their lineup. We thought that Alain Vigneault was going to do that for back-to-backs for Dan Girardi. Obviously, that's not happening. But you're looking at somebody like Kevin Klein, who's struggling right now. I really think you need some help with that. You know, you need something. Either, you know, you put him out for a couple games, see what's going on, have the doctors, have the trainers look at him, get him back on, you know, get him back. You have to. We have to get him back into where we were, that was a lovable, most enjoyable, ruffle his hair, you know, tell him that he's the Optimus Klein in our hearts, whatever the case may be. We need to get that back with him. Now, you know, still waiting on Gary here, but if you guys want to call in and talk to us about the New York Rangers, it's 657-383-1130. We're here for the next hour or so, you know, depending on how crazy I feel. But we do have somebody calling in. Let me bring him to the show. Welcome in Blue Seats Weekly. Who we have on the line?
Oh, man, you should know who this is.
Oh, this is beautiful. I don't recognize your new number. Oh man, you came back from the dead.
I did.
So
I think I give you a hand. I'll try and battle through this. So if I sound like too terrible, let me know. But I'm gonna try and talk this one out and help you out a little bit because I felt bad. I'm sitting listening. Hockey players, man, you know, we can't really miss a shift, so that's
right,
what's up. But I'm gonna let you keep taking the reins. I'll follow your lead.
So, you know, I feel this is a good time because the title of this week's show was, you know, Are They Coming Back to Earth? And honestly, numbers don't lie. Numbers aren't sustainable, as the Rangers obviously had. Obviously, their possession numbers have taken quite a swan dive ever since, I would say, honestly, since Buchnevich has been out last. And it obviously escalated with the fact that Mika Zibanejad is Mika Zibanejad dead right now with his broken fibula. But, you know, I don't know, man. It's been interesting to see, you know, what's going on Twitter. You go on that Facebook group that's, like, listening to you. I don't even want to talk about it, but we'll talk about that a little bit later with some of my newest segment that I love, and I think we're going to bring it back weekly. It's called Dumb Shit Ranger Fans Say. So we're going to, you know, we're gonna talk about that a little bit later in the show. But let's talk about it. The Rangers are obviously having problems right now putting pucks in the net and also generating a true rush. We can attribute it to not having a good puck-moving defenseman. Keith Yandel, I miss you. Adam Clendenning, I'm sorry you're in jail right now. I don't know what you did to piss off AV. You can talk about them getting pushed over and playing a more board-style game, which they're not. There's a lot of things we can talk about here. Nick, I'm going to throw it over to you, and we can have this conversation back and forth. But honestly, what the hell is going on?
I think it's a mixture of things. I think the biggest thing is, A, they don't have the puck-moving defenseman to be able to get the puck up to our forwards, our highly skilled forwards, that is, which it sounds really weird to say that because it's been a long time since the Rangers have had extremely skilled forward offensively. So it's one of those things where if you can't get these guys to puck off ice and let them do their thing, it's extremely, extremely tough for them to try and generate offense, A. B, the Rangers are not cycling the puck down low. So what I mean by that is a lot of their stuff is coming off transition in the neutral zone. They're forcing turnovers, and they're coming into the zone. They're getting one shot, and that's it. They're either scoring, the puck's getting stopped, or if there's a rebound, the defense is picking it up and clearing it away from the net and not letting the Rangers generate. So the biggest thing for me is that the Rangers have to generate more 5-on-5 offensive zone possession and be able to sustain their offense, especially down low below the goal line. Because when you cycle the puck down low, you're able to wear down the defense and you're able to create more looks across the slot line, shots from the point because the forwards up top start to sag in to help the defense, because they know the defenders are tired from chasing guys around in the corner. So just by cycling the puck, it creates more offensive. It gives you zone time. B, it's all about puck possession. You're controlling the puck. You're controlling the pace of play. And you're doing what you want to do, and you're inflicting your will on the opposition. And also, by having so much good puck possession, it allows you to keep your bench fresh while tiring out the other team. So that, for me, is the biggest thing. Then I don't like how the Rangers keep trying to drop pucks back to the point. Teams are aware of it. Teams see what the Rangers want to do. They see that they want to get these point shots. And when you see guys like Klein and Girardi and even McDonough or Brady Shea wind up from the point with for a slap shot, guys are getting their sticks in the lane. They're getting their bodies in the lane. They're blocking a bunch of shots. And it's made, so a lot of the Rangers' shots on goal aren't coming. So that's another issue. So the biggest thing I can really talk about is the fact that AV is just a Landvigneault and is completely 100% against making in-game adjustments. That, to me, is the worst thing in the world. And he doesn't recognize that power play hasn't been working lately. Why? They're passing up too many shots. They're not getting the puck and just one-timing it. So there's little things that we're starting to see that have been here the entire time while AV has been the Rangers head coach. It's not one of these things that has popped up, out of the blue. These are things that we've seen with Vigneault over the 3 years that he's been here and now the fourth year that are just starting to rear their ugly head yet again.
Right, and I mean, it's frustrating to watch because the Rangers, especially this year, The Rangers looked, going into the start of the season, something very special. I know Gary talked about going into the preseason feeling very confident about this team, the way they were structured, having the fact like we were going to get VC and Buchnevich finally, you know, in a Ranger uniform, especially Buchnevich, since we, you know, the uncertainty of him with him playing in the KHL. I know a lot of it going on, and even David, when he wrote about Buchnevich during in the Blue Seats 1.0, you know, there was a lot of talk about Buchnevich always wanting to come over to America. Obviously, money talks, and a lot of things happen where, you know, things change with that. So a lot of people's uncertainty, I wasn't one of those people, though, but you did see a lot of people have uncertainty about really Buchnevich really wanting to come over here. Obviously, getting Jimmy Vesey was huge also, just because, you know, his dad has ties with the Maple Leaf organization, so you thought he was going to go there to be not only with his dad, but Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, all that youth that they have there. Really, right now, if you look at what's going on in Toronto, 10-8 right now, they beat a decently sized Edmonton Oilers team 4-2 last night, and, you know, McDavid versus Matthews too, which obviously this time lived up to the hype because both Matthews and McDavid scored. So you had a look there. Obviously, if you look at what was going to happen if he went over to Toronto, he wouldn't probably have been as highly touted as some of the other youngsters on there. Obviously, he'd probably been the fourth or fifth youngster that they would actually consider and look at. He could have went home to Boston. Boston, to me, has a lot of issues of their own in terms of their front office. I think it would have been a mess there. I think their
blue line is worse than ours.
Yeah, their blue line is terrible. I mean, obviously, Zdeno Chara is not only getting up there in age, he's actually injured again. So there's a lot of issues there. If you thought our blue line is bad, please watch a Boston Bruins game, and you can see what we're talking about. Not only is their blue line bad,
they're a Vezina caliber season. I'm sorry, Sean, I didn't want to cut you off. But
no,
Tuukka, in spite of that defense, a hell of a resurgence.
And I mean, you know, looking at Tuukka last year, obviously wasn't a strong year at all by any means, but he is certainly bouncing back this year. But the Rangers, you look at why VC probably came to New York, land of opportunity. You see that the core, you see not only does he have somebody that he's used to playing with, but someone that he grew up with in Kevin Hayes. So he has that connection. Obviously, you know, Chris Drury, and all his personal relationship with Walsh, the agent there. So a lot of things, you know, happened there to make the fit. So I was excited when we got that. I saw that tweet saying that VC signed with the Rangers is probably the happiest day of the whole summer, obviously, that we saw for the Rangers, because obviously if you look at what the Rangers did this summer, due to the cap constraints, it wasn't much. It was a lot of cheap depth signings, and we're seeing that depth right now with Brandon Peary, Josh Joris, just to name a few, Nick Holden, Adam, I'm always in jail, Clendenning, so on and so forth. But
it showed a complete, I think, and you and I were talking about this the other day, I think it showed a complete 180 in philosophy in the front office. And I think it showed that Gorton is really kind of running the show. I thought last year with the Staal trade, that just seemed like a Sather move. That didn't seem to me like it was Jeff Gorton saying, yeah, this is my guy. Because
right.
I think if Gorton had his way, he would have went out last season and traded for Michael Grabner and traded for Brandon Peary, who both were available at the deadline. Peary got moved. Grabner stayed put in Toronto. But, I mean, it's one of those things where he identified, okay, we lost Hagelin, we lost his speed, the penalty kill suffered. So who can we get that Hagelin-like for cheap money and that, you know, we can possibly expose in the expansion draft if we have to? And he identified Michael Grabner, perfect signing. So, I mean, and then, you know, he got a Josh Joris, who you can also actually, because Joris is a one-year deal, you can't actually expose him, so that's actually my mistake. But he went out and he made savvy, real smart signings. The moves that the Holden deal, as much as I don't like Nick Holden, even though he's played really, really well of late, getting him for a fourth-round pick, really good move. He identified blue line's a weakness. Got to do something to shake it up a little bit, but and he did. But here's my biggest problem. Just trying to jump back on the train a little bit. You remember at the beginning of the month, AV said because of the condensed schedule, Adam Clendenning will get a lot. Will probably get a few games this month.
He got one. He got one.
He got one game. One freaking game. And Adam Clendenning, and I know this, is not a world breaker. He's not a world beater. He, you know, there's a reason why he's been on like four or five different NHL teams at 19 years old. There's something with his game that teams don't like. And I understand that. I completely get that. But when the head coach comes out and says he's going to get, you know, a lot of games here in the month of November because we're playing a lot of, you know, a lot of games in a short period of time. And then he only plays one game. Can somebody in the Rangers media please hold AV accountable to this and ask him why and really put his feet to the fire on this one? You know, it's the one thing that people hated about John Tortorella. People bitched about Tortorella. He was too much of a hard ass. He's a disciplinarian, yada, yada. But the thing with Tortorella was and still is, the buck stops with him. If the team fails, he holds himself accountable. He's the first guy. If he's going to start pointing a finger, the first finger he points is the thumb, and he points right at himself. Right, wrong, or indifferent. You don't get that from AV. There's no sense of accountability from AV, and that I really don't like.
No, I mean, it's a night and day difference. We were, you know, looking back on the Tortorella regime, it was if the ship is sinking, I'm going down first, and they're all going to follow me. With the Elaine Vigneault ship, he has no problem pointing fingers at his goaltender. How many times did he throw Lundqvist under the bus after an abysmal team performance last year, even sometimes this year? I mean, he has he doesn't mince words, and I would say he's like Tortorella in that regard. He does, but he comes out a little bit more heavily sarcastic when he does speak, and he does share his thoughts about team play, but he doesn't take the blame in areas where I feel, you know, looking back, if we have to go all the way back there, a lot of AV's, Vigneault's problem and seeing how he can't adjust accordingly started all the way back in the Stanley Cup final, where he was clearly, clearly outcoached by Sutter. Clearly outcoached. The players weren't to be honest with you, were they outplayed in some aspects of the game? Of course. But not overall. This could have been a much closer series if Elaine Vigneault adjusted.
Oh, yeah. The funny thing was, I remember watching the Western Conference Finals that year, and I was praying to God the Hawks won. Because, A, the Hawks didn't look like they had it. They just looked like their legs were tired from the year before winning the Cup and their run and whatever. But the thing to me was, I knew that Daryl Sutter had AV's number back to when AV was in Vancouver. Remember in 11-12 when Vancouver was the best team in the NHL? They just beat out the Rangers for the President's Trophy, and they played the LA Kings in the first round. It was 1-8. Daryl Sutter in that series coached circles around Elaine Vigneault. And that was the first red flag to me. I remember watching that series. Like, wow, he's just not adjusting at all. He's just letting LA do whatever they want to do. And he's just not making an adjustment whatsoever. That was my first red flag. And then as the season went on in 13-14, after he came here, I saw the same stuff with him, that he just cannot adjust in game. And that's a big problem, and that's something, and it's also a problem when guys on his staff also can't make adjustments in game. Because if you know that's your weakness, you have to identify your weakness and surround yourself with people who can help cover up your weakness. That's what your coaching staff is there for.
Right. And you know, the weird thing about it is, and you're looking at this, Scott Arneil is not a bad coach. I mean, granted, you know, he was the first coach for the Columbus Blue Jackets. He was there. I mean, obviously, they didn't do too bad. But you look at his track record, he's not a bad coach. I mean, you've seen him make adjustments before. It's like almost everyone on that team wants to become like an assistant to Alain Vigneault, becomes brain dead about how to properly coach. And I'm not, here's the thing. Am I happy with the success that Alain Vigneault has given the New York Rangers? Yes. But is it any different than what John Tortorella has done when he was here as coach? Granted, Vigneault did go farther than Tortorella. He did. I'll give him that. Really, what else has he done? Has he trusted Chris Kreider more? What has Chris Kreider done for me lately? What has he done really in general? He's improved. You know, I will say this. JT Miller is a very good hockey player under Alain Vigneault. He's an exceptional hockey player under a system like Alain Vigneault's. So is Kevin Hayes. Kevin Hayes is finally getting it. Sure, his faceoff numbers are coming back down to earth. That was really expected because, you know, obviously he wasn't going to do it at a clip that he was doing it at. But you look at how he is now in his own end. I hated Kevin Hayes last year and even during his rookie year in our own end. I don't anymore. So much so that I really enjoy the penalty kill duo of him and Miller together. Both of them have become responsible in their own end, and that has a lot to do with Alain Vigneault. Maybe that also has a lot to do with them realizing that they need to become better in their own end and listening to the coach. But, you know, that once again goes back on Vigneault for making it a point that they have to improve in their own end in order for them to really. Go ahead.
I think the biggest thing is, you saw how Kreider with Tortorella didn't react well to the tough love, right?
Mm-hmm.
AV gave JT Miller and Kevin Hayes a big keeping ton of tough love. You want to talk about something tough? Try playing on a fourth line with Tanner Glass as you went. You remember that last year against Washington?
That was just awful. That was awful.
So AV really, he got his message across. I may not have liked how he did it, but he got his message across. And the thing that separates JT Miller from Chris Kreider, besides being really good defensively and really good on the boards, because Kreider is god-awful on the boards, amongst other things, the biggest difference is JT responded well to AV's tough critiques and criticism. And JT learned, hey, I got to get my stuff together, because if I don't, this whole thing could go away very quickly. Kreider with Tortorella wilted. That to me is the biggest thing. You see the mental makeup of each player. And just to be honest, you take Zibanejad away from Kreider, and you take Buchnevich away from Kreider. Kreider is nothing. Nothing. Here's the problem. He's also playing with Stepan. We've seen the last few years. Stepan is not the right center for Chris Kreider. Stepan's really not the right center for anybody on this team, but whatever. I won't get on my soapbox with that. But it's one of those things where Kreider, in the worst way, needs Zibanejad and Buchnevich to get healthy again. And if and when they do, you're going to see Kreider's production go back up, because he's the kind of guy who needs his line mates to open up time and space for him and room to operate with the puck, because he can't do it himself.
It's just fascinating to me, the type of, like you mentioned, the response and all that stuff. It's amazing to me, really, just to see all that. And, you know, look at how he's been playing, the type of player he's become, and we're talking about JT Miller here. Another person who didn't respond well to criticism is Michael Delzato, and then we traded him for Kevin Klein. So, obviously, tough love, you know, people can handle the people can't handle. And if you can't handle the tough love, you saw what happened under Vigneault. You get treated for Kevin Klein. That, you know, that brings me into a perfect segue. You know, this is a you know, little adult show. I mean, we're both adults here. We like to look at social media, because obviously social media it's crazy. The shit that I see on social media about this team, and Nick, you do too, is batshit insane. So what I did is I we're going to do this segment on the show saying, you know, dumb shit Ranger fans say. And I have a nice little background music so we can have it as I'm talking, you know, make it sound really good. Hopefully I'm not too loud. But here's the thing. I looked at Twitter I looked at Facebook, and that Facebook group, you get a lot of stuff from. I want to tell you, you get a lot of stuff from that Facebook group. One second, like, I didn't even have to stop. I announced it. One thing I do want to start with is everyone getting really emotional and saying goals, watchers, whatever they want to say about the fact that John Harkins tweeted out something and that they were going to come with Derek Brassard coming back. Obviously, the Rangers have a game at the Garden 2 days after Christmas, the 27th, against the Rangers. And, oh, my God, how cute was that to find out that Derek Brassard and Matt Zuccarello are going to hang out during Christmas? It melted every Rangers female fan's heart, and it made me want to vomit. Who cares?
Hey.
Who cares? I guess who cared, man?
Oh, sorry. My freaking phone muted me for whatever reason. No, I, for one, love that they're spending Christmas together, okay? You stop that. Stop that.
No,
I
won't. I think, you know, I mean, yeah, it's cute. Whatever. Ooh, that's fun. But who cares? I mean, you know, it's a good piece. I obviously, Hartnett did the right thing posting that tweet out, but the over-abuse of squad goals and squad and goals and all those little things, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter to me. I mean,
it's one of those things where I guess if you're a fan and, you know, you love the players that you just enjoy, like, oh my God, that's so cute. But I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it really don't matter though.
No, it doesn't. Another thing is, I'm gonna flip over to Facebook. There's just really here too many to choose from, just because of how disgusting this is. But obviously, you know, you look at this group, there's a lot of things that you can say. There's one person in particular that, oh, where is it? And because I'm just scrolling a lot, there's a lot of stuff here. Two people in general that just really need to go. Just find something. One of the comments made by one person, down to these scrubs, ugh, come on, just Lundqvist needs glasses or something. Well, what are you trying to say? Obviously, the goals last night were not Henrik Lundqvist's fault. I don't think they were. Nick, you?
No. How the hell is it Hank's fault that Kevin Klein passes the puck to the opposition? The thing that makes me laugh my ass off the most with that is the fact that if that was Girardi that turned that puck over, oh my God! You would think that Dan Girardi was setting people's kittens on fire.
No. I mean, oh no. You know, if it was... okay. Still same group, somebody totally different. If the Rangers aren't playing great hockey, who the hell is? Oh no, that's actually pretty positive. They're not playing great hockey yet, and Klein sucks. Just stop, please. Well, you know, you're honestly right with that. I'm not going to be mad at you with that. Very true. Very true. The national anthem. Oh, let's talk about the national anthem last night. Let's talk about
that. Do we have to talk about Jimi Hendrix Jr.? Do we have to?
No, actually, I can't really. That was really mean.
It was good that the Rangers did that. I'm not going to sit here and shit all over that whole thing, but I couldn't get into it. It was cool, like as a novelty kind of thing, but I really hope the Rangers don't do that again, to be honest.
It was rough.
That's just me. Yeah, right? It was just rough to sit through.
It just, obviously, just took a while to get through. One thing I do want to say, and a positive thing, is Henrik Lundqvist is now tied 13th all-time after yesterday in career wins with 385. So kudos to Hank on getting up to 385. He'll obviously get up to 400, maybe a little bit over that. He has a ways to go before he gets up to the level of a certain somebody named Martin Brodeur, who has 651, I want to say. So he has some ways to go. Do you think he ties that record or breaks it?
No. No. I think Brodeur got up to 691 because I think he was close to 700. I think that was the whole reason why he signed with the Blues. I can't remember Fatty's where he ended with that, but I think that's one of those records that will never be broken. I mean, as much as I would like to see Hank break it, I don't think he came over here soon enough in his career to have a chance to break it. I think it's one of those things, if he came over when he was, you know, 20, 21 years old, I think he would have had a shot. And I think the other problem is Hank's never won 40 in a season. He would have to put at least now, he would have to put at least two 40-win seasons together to have a shot at catching that record. Which, not impossible, because Hank is great. But it seems like the last 3 years were his real shot at getting a 40, especially 14, 15. But we all know McDonough was on a teammate killing spree that season. And he, you know, he tried to assassinate Hank. And so, you know, Hank couldn't get the 40 that year. He probably could have even gotten the 40 last year if he didn't miss a little bit of time like he did. So it's just one of those things where I wish he could get to 40, you know, at least once in his career. But what he's been able to do, putting up 30 wins in every full season that he's played, is nothing short of incredible. I mean, that just, if there's anything that goes to show just how great and phenomenal of a goaltender that he has been, just imagine with some of the teams that he's had, where he's had Carl Rakunek and Paul Mara I'm drawing blanks on something. Michael Roosevelt before Michael Roosevelt became good with the Hawks. So Hank really hasn't had, you know, his pickings of great defensemen to play behind, and he still managed to put up 30 every year.
I mean, okay, you're mentioning Roosevelt before he came good in Chicago. Are you just saying that because, like, I don't see it still? I didn't see it when he went to Chicago. But,
He's not a world beater, but he's playing on the third pair. And if you're playing on Chicago's third pair, you're at least going to be respectable.
You know, but you look at it, and I put today in Ranger history the reason why I'm mentioning Lundqvist and tying for 13th with Mike Vernon of all goaltenders for 385 wins all time, is this time last year he actually passed Terry Stalchuk for third all time with 352 wins, which at the time was third most for teams that played with only one franchise. So he did that feat. And funny enough, that happened against the Carolina Hurricanes, which he then yesterday beat to tie.
You know what's funny? Last night was only, what, his 702nd game as a Ranger?
Yeah.
And he's got 385 wins. So he's won close to 60% of his games in his career.
Now, there was some crazy stat. I forget who posted it. 703 games, to be exact. He started 693, Lundqvist. So there was a crazy stat that I forget who posted it. If Henrik Lundqvist gets 40 or more shots on him, he's like 22-6-1, which is like a 77% win percentage. It's something ridiculous.
I mean, and you know why I don't find that to be odd, though? Because when you look at him as a goalie, whenever he plays, you know, 60, 65 games, he gets better. The more he plays, the better he gets. He's one of those, like, weird anomalies that most guys, when they play too much, they get tired. When he plays more, he thrives on the workload. So, for me, when he faces 40, that doesn't really shock me because, unlike most goaltenders, most people would say you don't want to have your goalie see that many shots in a game, which I would argue you really don't, because if you're facing a great team, they'll capitalize on those chances more often than not. But then when you look at it, though, conversely, you want your goalie to be able to get into a flow and see pucks and get into a rhythm and be able, you know, to start tracking the puck well. When goalies don't face, you know, when they face a limited amount of shots, it's harder on them, in my opinion, to be able to track the puck and be able to, you know where shots are coming from and be able to really get in a groove. So to me, that's actually not really a shock that Hank's safe winning percentage is that high when facing 40 or more.
No, it doesn't shock me. One thing I was doing while you were talking about that, I was counting the count for how many times the Rangers scored three or more goals for some Papagians. So out of the 24 games that they've played, 24, they've scored three or more 17 times. So, I mean, good job for them for trying to put Papa John's out of business. Hopefully there's more to that by, you know, February. We may not see any more of that three-goal promotion. Or Papa John's have been paying off the Rangers to, you know, tone it back a bit because it's getting a bit too much. Whatever the case may be, you know, the Rangers are scoring, and they're scoring at a high premium. Obviously, Kevin Hayes has a 30% shooting percentage. Obviously, he gets, you know, one or two shots a game, so he doesn't get a lot of shots. His number will come down a lot. There's a lot of players above 10% in a shooting percentage, which is unreal right now. Michael Grabner, the Rangers' leading goal scorer, who obviously no one predicted that to happen at all. I didn't. I certainly didn't predict Michael Grabner would be leading the Rangers right now with 12 goals, only two behind Sidney Crosby for the lead. You know, it's just weird to me seeing how deep our offense is, because we haven't had this deep of an offense, I would say, since actually I can't think of it. Even though we had a good force line with Moore, Boyle, and the alternating winger of Carcillo and Dorsett, they weren't that offensive minded as we have with all four of our lines this year. So we have four skilled lines that really can up the tempo and push the pace. When they're doing and firing on all cylinders, they can, you know, manage a good forecheck, manage, you know, plays deep in the end, staying in their end, forechecking really well, playing some very good board presence. I mean, depends on who the forwards are out there. If it's like a Hayes or a Miller, even a Faust. And I know, like, here's the thing. I agree with everyone that says Jesper Faust is not a top six player. He is not by any means, but he is a good forechecker. If you put him on the bottom six where he belongs, and you put him out there on a line with like either Grabner and Hayes, which we've seen, he produces well with them. He does what needs to be done to grind and stay out there. Forecheck, keep the puck, keep the pressure in the opposing team zone and the Rangers' offensive zone. He's done a very good job with that. I'm really pleased with him with that. But there's no reason for him to be playing with Stepan Kreider, Stepan Zuccarello, Stepan Nash, who, you know, Zibanejad and Zuccarello that sometimes you saw so far this year. He doesn't belong there. At the same time, and I talked about this last night with Gary, Jimmy Vesey is not a bottom six forward. If you give him top 6 minutes, he produces well, and you saw that last night. You also saw that in bits and pieces on the Flyer game on Friday. Obviously, the thing is with the Flyer game, he was in the bottom six. He got that assist on the Pimple. How do you pronounce his last name?
Pumpernickel.
Pumpernickel Brett's goal, his first as a New York Ranger. I mean, you really look at it this way. VC is better suited top six. Fast, better suited bottom. End of story. No questions about it. No questions.
AV has made me dislike Jesper Faust. He has. I'm not even going to sit here and try and deny it. AV trying to pigeonhole Faust into being a top six winger has finally, he's done it for the last 3 years, and now it's finally gotten to me and really pissed me off. I'm overseeing it. The fact that we started, the Flyer game, with VC on the fourth line and Faust on the top line, just it pissed me off. He's not a top six winger. He cannot play those minutes because he just doesn't have the skill set to do it.
Right.
Good forechecker, hard worker, good in the corners, good on the penalty kill, all this stuff. Bottom six player, fourth line player, third line at best. And if you're really in a pinch, maybe he can play 3 or 4 minutes on the second line. But that's it. That's it. I don't understand what is so hard for AB to get that through his stupid French-Canadian head. I really don't understand it. It's beyond annoying at this point. And the thing that I would really like to see, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Sean, because it's something that I've always believed about Chris Kreider as a winger, and it's something that you even brought up to me a couple of years ago. Kreider needs a sniper on his opposite wing, right?
Right.
Okay. What would you think about a line of Kreider, Stepan, Peary?
I mean, it could work. It could work, but, I mean, you've seen primarily Vigneault start Peary center. A couple of games he's played on the wing, mostly on the bottom six on the wing. They, for some reason, I think a lot of this had to do with Grabner's hot hand. They like Grabner over Peary in the top six, and I think that a lot of that had to do with his hot hand, his scoring touch, the 12 goals that he has so far. I wouldn't mind trying it out for a couple games just to see how it plays out and, you know, do some line rushes, do some practice shifts with those three together, because you do bring up a good point. Kreider does need somebody who can snipe, because you saw Kreider play very well when it was him, Stepan, and Marty St. Louis during the first year of Marty St. Louis' run as a New York Ranger after the trade deadline, which when we traded the Chicken Parm Mafia King and Ryan Callahan. But you look at what's going on now, obviously we haven't found that replacement for a sniping winger to help complement Chris Kreider. Honestly, I do agree. I think that's a good idea to at least try it out. It doesn't hurt to try. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? What's the worst thing that's going to happen?
You know, if it doesn't work, through two periods, you can switch it up again.
Chris Kreider has been playing on the bottom six the past two games in the third period. He hasn't been playing well. Doesn't surprise me. You know Chris Kreider is going to have a good game is when he's noticeable. He's using his speed. The thing is, he can't go east-west. He can go north-south without any issue. The issue with Kreider is once you pull him over to or angle him out, he slows down a lot because he can't push off to go east-west that well. North-south, he is very good. Another thing with Chris Kreider, and you mentioned this just before, not a good solid board player. He's easily manhandled on the board, almost to a point where he gets in the box for, you know, holding, hooking, slashing, whatever the case may be, or just a dumb hit that he leaves his feet for no reason, like he did a couple years ago in that very weird Minnesota game. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
So you're looking at a lot of things with that. I mean, Kreider needs a winger that can complement him and a centerman that can complement him. More so a winger that's a good sniper that can go into an area, so to speak, almost be like, you know, shoot from the same area all the time, like an Alex Ovechkin, like a Jack Eichel, like a Steven Stamkos, just pepper shots towards the net. He stays in front and tries to use his big frame so that goalies can't see and tries to deflect pucks in. That's really, honestly, where his game is great in is when he gets that type of play where he can be the guy, just a Ryan Kessler-like player. That was something that, I don't know if you remember this, Lane Vigneault said he wanted out of Chris Kreider. Think just because of certain things, we haven't seen that yet because Lane Vigneault thinks of him as something else all of a sudden. or because we can't really find a winger that can complement him well. I'm all for trying him and Peary together. What would it kill the Rangers to do, just to try it? I mean, wouldn't hurt anything. You still have the balance where you can go drop down Jesper Foss to the fourth line, which is an area where he belongs. He's a defensive-minded forward. Obviously, he has more points than Andrew Ladd and John Tavares. I don't know about Tavares, but I know anyone does, really. Nick Holden does. I mean,
Dan Girardi has more goals than Andrew Ladd, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. Girardi has two. Ladd has one. Let me just double-check that so we don't sound like...
No, I think Girardi has three.
Does he?
I'm pretty sure Girardi has three.
Andrew Ladd has two goals and one assist for a whopping 3 points in 21 games. Real great signing for the Islanders there. And Daniel Girardi. I mean, I know two for sure. If it's three, that's amazing. Yeah, three goals, three assists. So, yeah, more
Dan
goals.
Dan Girardi is worth his $5.5 million.
It's insane. But you look at it, you know, you can say the same thing too. The Rangers have two sets of top two lines. Fine, whatever you want to say about that. But the way that Alain Vigneault manages and handles and adjusts that lineup, you can have two top lines though if you properly set your lines up proper. What I mean by that is, in a perfect world, you try that Peary, Stepan, and Kreider line. That's fine. Honestly, what you would want to do, if that doesn't work, you can swap that out with either Zuccarello or Nash, and then you have that. Your second line would be Zuccarello, Zibanejad, Buchnevich. I liked what I saw from the three of them together when they played together. More so than I did like with Kreider, Buchnevich, and Zibanejad. That's just me. Third line, I did like Zuccarello with those two. Then Kreider.
I think the problem is with that, Zuc is too pass first, and Butch is also more of a playmaker, not a scorer. I know he scored, you know, he had the 4-game goal streak before he got hurt, but Butch's real style, where he really comes in handy, is by playmaking and opening up ice for his teammates. That's why I think him and Kreider work so well together. I think that's also why him and Zibanejad work so well together, because Zibanejad's a guy who can score 25 goals as a center. He won't make a lot of his money on assists, even though he can. His real bread and butter is being able to shoot, especially that one-timer from the left circle, a la Alex Ovechkin. So I think that's why I wouldn't break that up. As much as I love Zuc, he just gets too pass-happy for my liking.
So fine, you keep Kreider with them. But at the same time, though, if you want to try Kreider with Peary and Stepan, you have to do something there. Maybe you put Nash with Zibanejad and Buchnevich. I think, you know, you have two playmaking forwards that could get Nash going. And, I mean, he really doesn't need the help, as we saw last night. But if you had a good two playmaking forwards with Nash, you'd probably be even better. Now, I know I'm contradicting myself by saying that Jimmy Vesey does not belong in the bottom six. But really, you look at this third line. The third line is getting, you know, upwards of right in the middle between the second and third lines in terms of minutes. They're getting a lot of ice time. You would do Miller, Hayes, and Vesey, which, you know, is a line that works well. We've seen that together so far this season, and it's a line that works well. Hayes and Vesey together have great chemistry. I think it has to do a lot with their childhood friendship. You put JT Miller in the mix, it's an excellent line, and then you have your bottom, you have your final line being, you know, Grabner, Joris, and Foss. Did I forget someone?
I think I forgot.
Lindbergh.
I don't think so. I think you hit them all.
Yeah, but Lindbergh is your extra forward anyway.
No, Lindbergh is traded for Dougie Hamilton.
Now. if you saw what went on with today on hockey, you know, the hockey Twitter stuff, Brian Burke is too pleased with that. He'll give you a quarter for a payphone. I loved his quote.
Oh, man. I love when Berkey gets mad. That was the first thing that came to my mind. I'm like, dude, Berkey, it's 2016, bro. Nobody uses a payphone anymore. You know, it's just one of those things. That was pretty funny. But, I mean, you want to make a bet that the team that he was talking about was the Rangers?
Oh, no doubt in my mind it was the Rangers. It was the Rangers. We're going to find out that it was the Rangers when he sees fit to tell us it was the Rangers and that they offered him Tanner Glass for Dougie Hamilton straight up, and he laughed at that.
I think the only other team that it could have been, because he got really angry, the only other possible team would have been Toronto.
I mean, another possibility. Obviously, the animosity he has towards Toronto, I could see that.
That's the only, but I don't think he would call a luau like that in public. That's the only thing that makes me hesitant.
Yeah, the thing is, though, the current regime in Toronto has nothing to do with this hatred. They're all pretty much gone. So I honestly think it's the Rangers. There's no one in my mind that I could think it could be. I mean, obviously, it's going to be funny when we find out it was the Rangers. And what are you going to do about that? Obviously, every team in the NHL does it. I'm sure Burke's done it before. Started, you know, rumors just to get something out there. But, man, what an interesting day to see a use of a quarter for a payphone still. Ball things. Next he's going to tell us back something. I really don't know. But good for Brian Burke. I mean, obviously, the Calgary Flames are not in a good spot right now. The goalie that they signed to be their number one is now their backup in Brian Elliott, as Chad Johnson, of all goaltenders, former Ranger, great Ranger, Chad Johnson is now leading the Calgary Flames. But, I mean, injuries galore over there, too. Just
the Johnny Gaudreau.
Yeah. Bad defense. I mean, I watched the opening game between Calgary and Edmonton, and even looking at Edmonton, they don't believe in defense either, but by God, it was awful.
Well, I mean, if you want to watch a pretty good game, I think it's going to be a good game, at least. Toronto and Edmonton Toronto and Calgary are playing right now, and we could see, or Toronto and Calgary, did I say Edmonton?
Yeah, you said it twice. I mean, I was letting you know because
I did.
You seemed really excited about that game.
I mean, six concussions, and I'm kind of like Eric Lindros. I kind of don't know who I am half the time. So, hey, look at that. Calgary's winning 3-0 because Burke told them, put your foot down on them. They tried trading me Jonas Enroth.
Oof.
I'll say this. If the Rangers did reach out to Calgary on Dougie Hamilton, I'm 100% okay on it. Even if Berkey calls us out on it and actually names us as the team, I'm 100% okay with it, because that means Jeff Gorton has single-handedly identified the issue with this team and is looking to address it. That is a good thing.
I mean, he's trying. They were in the mix for Trouba before he signed with Winnipeg. So, I mean, they're looking. I'm still waiting, because there's something that needs to happen in Anaheim. A deal is imminent, because they are playing with salary cap hell right now for having those two defense, and they need to get one off the plate. Obviously, it looks like it would be Cam Fowler.
He's got seven goals this year.
He does. He's a good shoot-first defenseman. He's a good puck-moving defenseman. Oh, man, I'm talking about Keith Yandel right now. I miss him.
Yes, you are. I'll say this, too, just to go back on your Anaheim point. They also have to do something because of expansion draft implications. If they don't move one of their young players, their young blue liners, they could lose either Vatanen or Fowler in the expansion draft for nothing.
Right.
Because of the Kevin Bieksa contract. So they're a team that has to think about it. The guy for me, though, if we're looking to make a trade and we're looking to zone in on somebody, the Rangers have to do everything they can to get Kevin Shattenkirk. If the trade route is the route they're willing to go, because I think if Shattenkirk gets the free agency, some team's going to write a ridiculous check for him, as well they should, because Shattenkirk's a hell of an offensive defenseman. Great puck mover, great shot from the point, can quarterback the power play, everything that Keith Yandle could do, but even better. But I think that's the guy you have to identify via trade if you're the Rangers, if you're dead set on trying to trade for a defenseman. As much as I like Fowler, and I think Fowler would do really well for us, I think Shattenkirk, he grew up a Rangers fan. He would have a chance to come home, play with the team that he loved as a kid, which I know a lot of people don't buy into. I think there's a little bit something there with that. I mean, if you have a chance, I mean, John, I'll just throw it to you. If you had a chance, you know, if you were a great hockey player and you had a and you were in the NHL and you had a chance to go to your childhood favorite team that was competitive enough to win a cup, wouldn't you do it?
Oh, of course. Why not?
I mean, even if, say the Rangers offer him a 5x5.5 instead of a 5x6, I feel like that would be a deal that he would take.
I agree.
So, that's the guy, if I'm the Rangers, I'm really looking to identify and really looking to go after from a trade standpoint. And right now, St. Louis isn't doing that great. They've played well. Let me just pull them up in the standings real quick. And the only reason why I don't know where they are in the standings right now is because I technically and usually do not look at the standings until January 1st, because that, to me, is when the season really starts. I mean, you want to get all the points you can now because, you know, these early regular season games matter. And they definitely do, because if the Rangers didn't have such a great – and the Rangers really didn't have a great October last year. If Henrik Lundqvist didn't have a great October and November last year, the Rangers don't make the playoffs. Hank single-handedly got us into the playoffs last season. But if you look at it right now, St. Louis is sitting second place in the Central Division, which, not bad, good spot. 29 points, 4 points ahead of Nashville, who is the first wild card. And then they're only 5 points ahead of the Dallas Stars, who are coming on. And they're 5 points ahead of the Winnipeg Jets, who are coming on. So St. Louis really can't rest on their laurels. They're a minus one goal differential, 13-7-3. You take away those three OT losses, those were regulation losses. Boy, oh boy, they'd only be sitting 1 point ahead of Nashville, Dallas, and Winnipeg. So St. Louis is a team that has to keep their foot on the pedal. And if they're not sitting pretty come March, definitely, or even the middle of February, I could definitely see the Rangers trying to swoop in and say, look, Shattenkirk hasn't signed an extension yet. He's probably not going to. You guys probably aren't going to win the cup this year. We'll take him off your hands. We'll give you a little something in return. So this way everybody wins and you don't lose face. I think that's something that really could happen this year.
I agree with that. I mean, you know, tailing into the end of the show, we have about 10 minutes left. If you guys have any last-minute conversational pieces that you want to talk about, you can dial in at 657-383-1130. This episode, after it airs, will get transmitted and put up to all those areas for podcasting and re-listening factors that you want to re-listen if you missed any minute of this. Heard me rambling for the first half hour or so. Then you saw Nick swoop in and save the day. And now here we are with about 10 minutes left, 9.5 minutes. Let's talk about what the Rangers have coming up. Three games. They have Buffalo tomorrow night, Carolina again on Saturday, and then finally the Islanders on Tuesday before we're back on it again for another week of another show. Let's just talk about this. Islanders, I just actually saw, are surprisingly up 2-0 against Pittsburgh. Is Marc-Andre Fleury in there, or is that Murray in net
Matt
tonight?
Murray. Matt Murray is in net tonight.
And the Rangers can't figure him out. Anyway, fine, whatever. Buffalo obviously got their future captain, Jack Eichel, back last night. And obviously, we all know what Eichel did. He had a goal and an assist last night. Nice little Stammer-type, Ovechkin-type, set me up in the slot right there on the faceoff dot and watch me blast one through you on the point. So, I mean, their power play is going to become lethal. Again, one of the biggest things you know, going into it, 9-8-3 are, I believe 9-8-3. Let me look at this right now. I'm actually looking at it. Buffalo is 8-9-5. Excuse me. Right now in the season, they've been very surprising. I mean, the issue that they're having is the lack of goal scoring. Obviously, Jack Eichel coming back and helping them set up some of the differences, obviously, I think will help. They'll get a lot better over this. Obviously, I don't think they are a playoff team. They're not a playoff team by any means, Buffalo. But go ahead.
No, I 100% agree. I think actually Carolina's more of a playoff-ready team than Buffalo is. But Buffalo's going to be there right down to the wire this year. They're not going to be, you know, a top-three drafting team. They're going to be competitive. They're going to be tough. I think the biggest thing, and like you said, is their goal scoring. And I think the real biggest issue that they're having, they don't have depth scoring. They're very top-heavy when you look at, you know, some of their forwards up high. Poso, it's Jack Eichel, it's Ryan O'Reilly, Evander Kane. And even they have one of the Reinhardt boys. I can't remember which one. I think it's Sam.
Sam.
And then after that, there's a huge drop, you know, from that kind of point production and goal production. So I think tomorrow night's game is where you're going to see the Rangers' depth outplay the Sabres' depth, and that's why the Rangers are going to win tomorrow night.
Then you go back and you got Saturday, you got once again, you're facing the Carolina Hurricanes. Obviously, if you really want to talk about it, the Hurricanes do have a bad taste in their mouth with how that game ended. Ron Hainsey may have had a point where he, looking at that play, it was a questionable call. I will give Hainsey that, but you know, it was a call. It was a big call that changed the outcome of the game. And obviously you lost Hainsey, who's a really good penalty killer. And also you lost him for an extra 2 minutes because he had a big old temper tantrum the size of a 2-year-old out there on the ice. So they tapped on the unsportsmanlike, which I was excited for. And I called, they needed to do that. So it was the right thing because he was being an embarrassment. Just deal with the call. Bad calls happen all the time. I mean, Andrew Shaw got a bad call late in the game in the Montreal Anaheim game last night. I mean, that wouldn't really change the difference. Yeah, talk about a tire. You want to look at that if you can find it online. But, I mean, the major thing with that, the Rangers always take the Carolina Hurricanes lightly, and I don't understand why. It makes no sense to me because Peters is an excellent coach. He's an excellent coach. He knows how to teach these guys. If you look at the Corsi standings for those who have their glasses taped up and all about the advanced stats, they're ranked second in the league in Corsi, but they're turning their game around. It wasn't really always that high. They're a very good possession team. We saw that last night by really pinning the Rangers in their own end. Expect a lot of that. Also, we finally, you know, kept quiet Skinner. I expect Skinner to do something really on the goal end that night. I don't expect Victor Stahlberg to be the hero again. But I do really also expect the Rangers to pull out the win. Obviously, Jordan Staal will be out again for Carolina as he's dealing with a concussion. I wonder if Mark has given him any pointers on how to deal with life not playing hockey after, you know, dealing with concussion symptoms through the last, you know, 5 years of his career. But, you know, looking at that game, that's going to be another boring. Every time they play Carolina, and Nick, I don't know if you agree with it, it's always so boring.
Yeah, no, Carolina understands they don't have the speed, they don't have the skill, they don't have the talent level to be able to really compete with the Rangers. They have to dumb the game down and really try and pin the Rangers to the boards, you know, trap them in the neutral zone, don't let them come through with speed, dump the puck in, you know, get their guys back to be able to be able to withstand the Rangers' forecheck and move the puck out quickly, which is something that they were doing for the most part, and then the Rangers adjusted it, and they actually had guys flying into the zone with speed. And that's the thing about dump-and-chase hockey, which a lot of people may not like it because you're losing possession of the puck, and I understand that because in this league it's so hard to get the puck back once you lose control of it. The Rangers, they finally had two guys go in on the forecheck and force the Carolina D-men to make a quick decision with the puck, move it quick, or turn it over. And once they did that, they were able to force some turnovers. And most of that third period last night was played in the Carolina end. And a lot of it had to do with the Rangers finally on the forecheck, being harder in their forecheck and forcing Carolina's defense into mistakes.
Yeah. And, you know, it really looks like the Rangers finally, you know, second half of the second period and all of the third really corrected that. But we need a full 60-minute effort of that, and it has to start tomorrow night in Buffalo. Then it has to continue, and it has to be a better start. And it has to be, you know, the same finish as we saw against Carolina. These Carolina games, you know, Rangers can do one of two things. Rangers can either blow them out completely, or they allow them to stay in. It needs to be one of those blowout games, because I don't think anyone's heart could take it after what we saw last night. And then finally, we invade the worst hockey arena in all of the NHL, the worst ice in all of the NHL, and you thought that Madison Square Garden had bad ice. You've never obviously played at Barclays yet. And the New York Islanders, who are, like I said, currently beating Pittsburgh 2-0, which makes no sense to me. But nothing about
I hate to cut you off again. I've been doing this all night, and I feel really bad. Matt Murray might have just made the save of the year on John Tavares.
Well, there
five
you have
on
it.
5-on-3 power play. 5-on-3 power play for the Isles, and Murray went post to post with his glove and robbed Tavares on an open net.
It's just really a story of how the Islanders' season is going. Obviously, the inner turmoil of hating to travel to Brooklyn is still a big factor. The turmoil with the arena and the team about getting better ice. The Islanders do have an out clause, which after next season, which all signs point to them using that out clause, they'd be stupid if they didn't. You know, it's getting as bad as seeing $2 tickets for some games up on StubHub, which is insulting to those who pay for the season tickets. I will say, the Islanders are probably the team out of all of our rivals, but you know what, Pittsburgh has been coming up there. But the Islanders are the team I hate the most, but this is unfair to their fans. So seeing stuff like this happen, seeing the fact that Barclays as a whole, the Barclays Center, won't take care of the ice to help it be NHL ready and NHL grade ice, it's disrespectful. No one wants to go to that arena. There's no good seats in that arena, as you can tell, because there's an obstructive view anywhere. And I don't know if you remember this. Last year when that all came about, the owner of Barclays said, well, you can watch the game on your phone. No, you can't.
I mean,
they block you out.
You know, here's my biggest thing with that, right? It just shows how inept the Islanders are as a franchise and how they just don't get it. They really do not get it at all. And it's a shame because, like you said, it's a shame to their fans because there are, as much as I hate their franchise and I hate most of their fans, they do have some really, really good and really passionate Isles fans that bleed for the blue and orange. Which, you know, and it's sad, especially, and then when you watch a talent like John Tavares, who is a top five player in the world. He is unbelievably skilled with and without the puck. He just knows what he's doing at all times. It's so sad to see a player like that get his prime wasted. And I hate the Islanders. Part of it is because I hate the Islanders, but I would love to see Tavares go to Toronto when his contract is up. Just to stick it to that franchise. The fact that the Islanders even moved to the Barclays Center just shows how inept they are as a franchise. You knew going in that building was not built for ice hockey. It was an NBA-built arena. It was designed for the Brooklyn Nets. That was the entire purpose of that arena when it was built. And, okay, we're going to put a hockey team in there. Don't care what it does for the commute for your fan. Don't care that the seats suck. Don't care about anything, what it does to your fan base. We're just going to move there because Nassau wants us out. They're not going to build us a new Coliseum. And it was such a short-sighted move. It really was. And the biggest problem is the Islanders didn't want to split 50-50 and put up a lot, you know, put up most of the money to build a new arena on Long Island to stay, and Long Island made it very clear they don't want the Islanders there. They just, whether it's the city council or whatever, they do not want the New York Islanders on Long Island. The best thing for the Islanders, honestly, and I'm not saying this as a rival fan, they need to be relocated, And what I mean by relocate, they have to be moved to Seattle. They have to be moved to Quebec City. They have to, you know, I would have been okay if they moved them to Vegas and let them become the Vegas hockey team. The Islanders cannot survive in this market. They just can't do it.
I mean, talks have been also brought up if they do stay in New York, doing something by Citi Field, home of the Jonas Cespedes. I mean, the Mets.
I refuse.
Hey, it would be you know, a nice icing on the cake for your, you know, sport fandom, knowing that your favorite baseball team allowed your favorite hockey team to hate to build their hockey arena next to you. So, you know, just have it built like they did when the Jets and the Devils are by one another, when they were in Continental and then Giants Stadium.
Hey, the Giants were there too there, pal.
Yeah, the Giants were there too, but at least the Giants are winning. So the thing is, we have run out of time, and it's been great talking to you guys. Obviously, as you all know, we'll be back tomorrow night with a post game right after the Buffalo Sabres lose to New York Rangers. I'm going to say by a score of 3-1. I'm always going to say 3-1 so we can hear this all the time. Papagians. So anyway, it was really good talking to you guys. I'm Sean. That was Nick. We'll see you all tomorrow. Make sure you listen to this right afterwards. It's going to be aired on iTunes. It's going to be on Stitcher Radio. It's going to be right on our website. Or if you want to go back to Blog Talk Radio, it's going to be there for you. Once again, this has been In the Blue Seats Weekly. We'll see you next week if you don't want to listen to us during the postgame stuff.